Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Big things are happening at Gilcrease Museum. Earlier this week, architects were named for the major renovation and expansion of the museum. The Smith Group from Washington, D.C. was named as lead architect, along with Tulsa firm One Architecture. Smith Group has worked on the Smithsonian's National Museum of African American History and Culture, as well as the National Museum of the American Indian on the Mall in D.C. While that work is just getting underway, exhibits continue at the museum. Through the spring, Gilcrease has been featuring Pulitzer Prize-winning photographs featured over the history of this award from 1942 through the present. A walk through the galleries are like taking a walk through history. Many are familiar images, others less so. But as you view iconic images like Babe Ruth's final farewell at Yankee Stadium, the raising of the U.S. flag at Iwo Jima, celebrators tearing down the Berlin Wall, or a firefighter holding a dying child from the Oklahoma City bombing, all of these images bring back vivid memories. As these images, whether of important events or just a snapshot documenting life in America or elsewhere in the world, freezes a moment in time. There's about a month left to go see the exhibit, Pulitzer Prize Photographs from the Museum. It closes July 14th at Gilcrease. Mark Dolph is the curator of history there, and he joins us today to talk about the exhibit. Mark Dolph, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you, Rich. It's always a treat to visit with you here at Studio Tulsa.
Yeah. The Gilcrease has, for several months, been featuring these Pulitzer Prize-winning photographs from the museum, which document the whole history of that competition, going back to, I guess, 1942, all the way through the last year or two. As viewers have been going through the galleries, what has been the general perception of people who see this exhibit?
I don't know that there's one general perception that I can share. It's such a wide range of reaction and emotions to the exhibition. But I think for the most part, and I'll use myself as an example because I make a point throughout the week to visit the exhibition and visit with our guests, our visitors in the space to get their reactions because it is a different kind of exhibition for Gilcrease Museum. I think so many visitors, regardless of their age, let's say they're from their mid-teens to the more mature set amongst us, will recognize images that are part of their lives. For us here in Oklahoma, obviously the Oklahoma City bombing is an example. Berlin Wall for people that were around in the late 1980s, a very important event. But I think so many of these images bring this wide range of emotions from joy to anger. There are many of them that make me angry that in one sense the world hasn't changed enough and why are we seeing a repeat of certain kinds of events to trauma that produces overwhelming emotion in many cases. I was visiting with a guest a couple weeks ago, and I could tell that she was very emotional. She had been weeping, and she apologized. And I said, oh, my goodness, there's absolutely no reason to apologize for that kind of reaction to these images. I think I would worry about you if you didn't have that emotional reaction, that it proves that you're human.
Yeah. Many of these are very iconic images. They're almost used as a montage of history, because many of these photographs have shaped our perceptions to the events they depict.
Yes, I agree. You use the term iconic. The second photograph that you encounter is a great example of that. The Marines raising the American flag at Iwo Jima. Whether you were alive in 1945 when that event occurred and when that photograph was first published, or you're 20 years old, you have probably seen it's one of the most viewed, again, iconic photographs in world history. So iconic that it becomes the Marine Memorial on the Mall in Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
But there's so many other images that are much less, recording events much less well-known. They're very private, intimate settings, both heartwarming in many cases, but also very troubling in others.
Give us an example of some of that.
There's two very heartwarming images that I love. One is titled Burst of Joy, And it is this reunion of a family and their father, their husband, who has been in a North Vietnamese prisoner of war camp the previous 5 years. And they're reunited at Travis Air Force Base in California. And it is, the title is perfect. It is a burst of joy, this family coming back together.
The family member literally moving from the entourage and running with arms outstretched.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, just can't get to their father, their husband, soon enough. Now, your first reaction to that is joy, I think, most people. What makes this exhibition, I think, so special is that your reaction may change as you then read about this photograph. And I won't give it away. I want people to come and experience it themselves. But that's an example, that photograph, Burst of Joy, is an example that your first reaction impression may change as you read about it, learn more about it, and are able to place that photograph in context. Another favorite photograph, and this is pure joy, it is from the Barcelona Olympics, and it is the 4x100-meter relay, the women's race.
The Nigerian
team,
right,
has just become aware by looking up at the scoreboard that they have won the bronze medal. Not the gold, not the silver, but the bronze. And the release of just pure joy, emotion, is a beautiful photograph. Regardless of your race, your ethnicity, where you're from, I think every viewer of that just comes away feeling very good.
When we think of photographs of being in Gilcrease, it's many museums, but we think of it a lot of times as just being an art museum. We think to expect to see artistic photographs. And yes, these photographs are artistic, and certainly there's a lot of art in how they were created, often at a moment's notice. But this is really a history exhibit. This is an interpretation of history over 70, 80 years.
And I'll admit my bias as curator of history. I think I'm charged with finding ways to incorporate history, placing history in context through our exhibitions, whether it's from our own collection. I would use Americans All as an example of using our art to impart, convey a sense of history. Pulitzer Prize photographs, my first reaction to it when seeing it at the Newseum in Washington, D.C., and it comes to us from the Newseum, the Museum of News, was as a walk through history. That beginning with the first photograph in 1942 up through the most current images, and we have the most complete portfolio of photographs in the exhibition up until those that were named in April of this year. It is truly this way of experiencing history as Americans or as citizens of the world would have received that information through these photographs and the accompanying articles and essays that they were a part of.
It's interesting how the judges chose these most important photographs, because some have gone on to become the moment captured of an event. Others have become fairly lost to history. I'm thinking of the very first Pulitzer Prize winner photograph. It's of a labor strike during World War II. Was it an auto strike in Detroit?
Yes, it was an auto strike during World War II at the River Rouge Ford Motor Company plant there in Detroit. And I was not aware of that photograph until I saw it at the museum and now here at Gilcrease Museum. But in thinking about it, and again, trying to place it in some historical context, that one still image captures maybe all you need to know to understand the struggle between labor and capital and the tension that is always there. Yes, that's a wonderful photograph.
Now, when you think of labor photographs that have become iconic, you think of some of the earlier ones from the 1930s where you have the Ford, busting up Walter Reuther from the AFL-CIO at that particular point before the Auto Workers Union. And those are the sort of the iconic images. And it's interesting that they chose that image in a time when the world is aflame in the midst of World War II.
Yes, and one of the ways that I've come to process the exhibition is to, first of all, to go through it chronologically, begin in 1942 and end in 2018. that you see these changes in photojournalism. First of all, the kinds of photographs, as you're noting, that were selected for the Pulitzer and how that changes over time. This is a very general statement, but I would say that there are more of the heartwarming kinds of images in the 40s, the 50s, into the 60s than there are in the 90s and into the 2000s. So that reflects, I think, a change of maybe what's acceptable to be published through photojournalism. You see the change in technology, obviously from black and white. And I think one of the things I was struck by is how long it takes color to make its way into a Pulitzer Prize winning photograph. But then I think you also see changes in the technology, as in from film. And that very first photograph, 1942, of the auto workers' strike, the photographer Milton Brooks, he became known as One Shot Milt because he could get the perfect photograph. He only had two opportunities. He had a camera that had two pieces of film in it. So you really gain appreciation for the skill of these photographers to, first of all, be at the right place at the right time, but then to sense when this action is coming to a climax and to get that perfect shot that defines that event.
And that also is another theme that shows up in these photographs is oftentimes it's being at the perfect spot at the perfect moment and clicking at the perfect time, at the perfect instance. You know, obviously one that's an iconic image is the photograph in Dallas after the assassination of John F. Kennedy, the assassination of Lee Harvey Oswald by Jack Ruby. Another one, which is sort of, we don't think of it as maybe being a Pulitzer Prize winning material, but it's an incredible photograph, is this truck hanging off a bridge as, you know, the person is climbing to the safety as literally the half of the truck is hanging over the side of this large bridge. Again, perfect time, perfect moment, taking the photograph.
And that's a great example, that particular photograph of the truck that it's lost its steering, it's gone off the bridge, it's hanging precariously off the edge of the bridge, the cab is, with the two drivers. And it's an example that not every Pulitzer Prize-winning photograph is taken by a professional photographer. The person that took that photograph was just driving down the highway, and they witnessed this accident. They stop first to see what they can do to help, and then a woman gets her Kodak Brownie camera out of the trunk of the car and takes that photograph. And then another example of that non-professional taking what is now truly an iconic image, the Oklahoma City bombing. Charles Porter was not a professional photographer. He was working, I think he was in a bank, and the bomb goes off. He goes down to his car. He gets his camera and takes what is now that heartbreaking image of the firefighter holding the now dead child.
Yeah. And this gets into another issue when you see this exhibit, Pulitzer Prize Photographs in the Newseum, which is on display at Gilcrease Museum. It's in its final month. It closes July 14th. My guest today is Mark Dolph, the curator of history at Gilcrease, is that many of these images will be disturbing to some people. For example, if you have connections to the Oklahoma City bombing, this image is going to bring back really bad memories. Other photographs, the iconic Vietnam War photograph of the local provincial police chief at that moment, he's pulling the trigger on a suspected Viet Cong guerrilla. This is shown in the exhibit. And there are numerous others, again, capturing these poignant moments, tragic moments, and horrific moments.
We realized that from the very beginning. This is an intense experience. When I first saw it again there at the museum in Washington, I came away feeling that this was the most powerful experience that I had had in a museum outside of perhaps the visit to the Holocaust Museum, the National Holocaust Museum. I experienced personally as many emotions as I think a human can experience, from joy to the horror and everything in between. We do have signage trying to make folks aware, visitors aware, that some images may be disturbing. It's certainly not an exhibition for young children. And even children, say 12 or so years old, personally, I think that's kind of the point where I would then have a child in the exhibition, but they should be with a parent, a guardian, an adult that can help them process this, help them place these images in context.
But I think that's a great way to see the exhibit anyway, because if you're with an older adult, I mean, a lot of times this is going to bring both bad and good memories back, and that's a great way to process history.
Yes, I can imagine, let's say, a Vietnam veteran with their grandchild and going through that part of the exhibition. In fact, I think for a single theme within the span of the exhibition, Vietnam is probably the single most covered event. And then civil rights, I think, is another really primary theme. In fact, I would, again, it's personal, but based on when I grew up and came of age, I see the overriding theme within the exhibition is our challenges of dealing with race, not just within the United States, but globally. You see the best of humanity in this exhibition, but you also see humanity at its worst. So I think one way that I have come to process the exhibition with those more traumatic examples is as a call to action. That why, and I'll use this image, it's famine in Sudan, starvation in Sudan. It's another one of these horrific images. You have the small child, it's a little girl about 3 years old, crawling across the desert to a feeding station. And behind her is a vulture, literally awaiting his next meal before this poor child can be fed. And my reaction is, this is horrible, and why do things like this continue to happen? Famine can be the result of natural disaster, but our response to it can be far better than it typically is, whether that reaction or response is based on our feelings of race and the people involved. Often there are political reasons that not just the United States, but any world powers don't get involved to prevent these. So I think it does challenge us, the exhibition does challenge us to think outside ourselves. I think it's a very empathetic exhibition, placing ourselves in the position of these people that we're viewing.
They're amazing photographs from the civil rights era, as you mentioned, but it also reminds us that this struggle continues to this day because the Pulitzer Prize winner from, what, about 4 years ago, 5 years ago, is a scene from Ferguson, Missouri.
Yes. Again, that's why I think I've come away with this feeling. Yeah, and living in Tulsa, Oklahoma, circa 2019, where equity, trying to deal with our troubled past with race, we're going to have the centenary of the race massacre here in a couple of years. One of the early photographs in the exhibition is another one related to Oklahoma that I was not familiar with until I saw it. It is a photograph taken in the fall of 1951 in Stillwater, Oklahoma, of a football play between Oklahoma A&M and Drake University. Drake University was integrated. They had a African-American player, Johnny Bright, who was one of the leading candidates for the Heisman Trophy that fall. And Oklahoma A&M was segregated. There were no black players. And in the lead up to the game, the A&M coach had encouraged, can't see the air quotes there, but encouraged his players to not let the black guy, and I don't think he used that phrase, but not let the black player finish the game. And what you see in the photograph is an A&M player delivering just a vicious assault on black
player. I think that is the right word. It is not a tackle. It's not a block. It is an assault because the player was not involved with the play. He's 10 yards away from the play. And this A&M player basically, I think he breaks his jaw, doesn't he?
Yes, he eventually leaves the game. He was knocked out. He broke his jaw. And it probably ruined his chances for the Heisman Trophy that year. So I mentioned earlier, we see humanity at its worst. I guess I'm the eternal optimist that the glass is half full with a chance to fill and not drain away to empty. And I look at Oklahoma State today, and it's the African-American player that is an essential ingredient in their success. But then again, as you just mentioned, how far we have yet to go in regards to race, that Ferguson won the Pulitzer Prize in 2015. And then the most recent that we have in the exhibition is Charlottesville, another photograph that depicts us humans at our worst and the challenges that we still have in dealing with race.
It's interesting, though, all of these photographs are not depicting great events. Some are also depicting moments that capture a particular time in America. And I was really struck by one that was from the late 50s. It's a Norman Rockwell-esque picture. You almost think this must have been snapped by Norman Rockwell as a preparatory sketch for one of his Saturday Evening Post covers. It is a young toddler watching a parade. He comes off the curb, and the policeman reaches down with a smile on his face to put him back on. And it's really interesting because when you think of what was going on in the 1950s, people of the 1950s thought it was a terrible time filled with the beginnings of the civil rights movement, fears of the Russian, the Sputnik up in the air. I mean, this was a time of great fear. And it's interesting that our perceptions now, especially if you're a member of the white majority thinking back to the 50s, we think of this as an idyllic time. And here's this photograph that sort of confirms it in a way.
Yes. In a sense, that photograph is very nostalgic. Yeah. And nostalgia, I've often described nostalgia as a drug that helps us feel better, helps us deal with the challenges of daily life. And I would have loved to have been in the room when the committee that's selecting the prize-winning photograph for that year, what they had to look at in contrast to that image. Because the next year, the image that won is an execution in Cuba as a result of the communist takeover.
Yeah, Cuban Revolution.
Revolution. So, yes, the juxtaposition of these images on the wall, and we did intentionally present them chronologically. Again, this walk through history, but to see how, as you're making a great point, Rich, how the selection of these images is as interesting as the image itself and why one was chosen. Besides the 80 photographs that are on the wall, and I would say that seeing these photographs on the wall, framed and on a wall in a museum exhibition, is a very different experience than seeing them online or in a newspaper or a news magazine.
Or even
a
book.
That's right. It is a very different kind of experience. But besides those 80 photographs on the wall, there are over 1,000 more in the kiosk. So you can go, let's use the example of then-candidate Barack Obama, the fall, October, late October 2008, week before the election, and you see this beautiful image of then-Senator Barack Obama, soon-to-be President Barack Obama, in his black jacket. He's standing in the rain, getting ready to give a speech there as the election is coming to a climax. And it, for me, it really captures his humanity, the essence of this man. But you go to the kiosk, you bring up that image, and you see the suite of photographs that accompanied that because it won as a feature. So this photographer, photojournalist, was accompanying Barack Obama throughout the campaign. And it's this wonderful collection of photographs from the campaign. And I look at it and I say, well, golly, why didn't they choose this image of this little boy when he realizes that someone who looks like him has just been elected president? So that's fun. That's a really fun part of this, but it also allows you to get deeper into the experience.
It's also, I should mention, this kiosk is an electronic kiosk, so it's like a touchscreen sort of thing where you can just pull up any of the images that have won the Pulitzer Prize over the history of the award. My guest today is Mark Dolph, a curator of history. Pulitzer Prize Photographs from the Newseum is in its final month on display at Gilcrease Museum. It's on display through July 14th, and he's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. One of the things I found interesting was the fact that you'll see an event that obviously had great impact at its point, and I'll use the example of the moment in the weeks after the fall of the Berlin Wall, where the Pulitzer Prize-winning photograph is this young person chipping away on the western side, obviously, because there are murals all over the place. He's chipping away at the wall. That wins the Pulitzer Prize. Now, at the moment, we thought this was going to be a major turning point in history, and certainly is a turning point of history. But it's not that, you know, when you think of it, you know, you think of that moment, having lived through it, and you think, wow, everything's going to be different from this point on. Now, here, 30 years on, we say, well, yes, it's different, but it's sort of the same.
And you're right, Rich. That photograph is a perfect example of the way our reaction to these events through the photographs changes over time. Because like you, I can remember where I was when I saw the wall coming down, both in photography like we have there in the exhibition, but also the news broadcast of the day, and thinking the course of human history is changing. The trajectory has changed. Democracy, the forces of good have overcome the evil empire represented by the Soviet Union and its satellite states in Eastern Europe. And for some of those countries, 30 years on, that's certainly the case. Germany's been reunified and is a powerful democracy today. But not so much in some of the other. In fact, here in the past few years, the change back to a more authoritarian type of government in many of those countries has accelerated.
Yeah. And I think it gives you a sense that this was this moment where we thought it meant one thing. And sometimes it means even more as the future rolls on. Sometimes it means not so much. And it's very interesting looking at these photographs. Quickly before we go, you have an event tonight at the Circle Cinema. It's a film, Joseph Pulitzer, Voice of the People. Tell us about this briefly.
We've talked about these photographs here for the past 20 minutes or so. We haven't talked about the man that made this possible, Joseph Pulitzer. An immigrant from Hungary, came to the United States, served in the Civil War, was one of these men that took the place of a wealthy person that could pay for somebody to take their place. And he goes on to create truly the first media empire, with first the St. Louis Post-Dispatch and then the New York Journal. And in thinking about Pulitzer and having pre-screened what we'll show tonight at the Circle, our great partner, Circle Cinema, is how important Pulitzer was in setting the stage for how news has been presented. And his legacy is not only this exhibition, it is the world we live in today as far as journalism, as far as the way we receive and process information, for both good and in some cases not so good.
All right. That's tonight at 7 at Circle Cinema. Mark, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you, Rich.
Mark Dolph is the curator of history at the Gilcrease Museum. Gilcrease is featuring Pulitzer Prize photographs from the museum. It's in its final month on display at the museum through July 14th. By the way, tonight at Circle Cinema at 7 o'clock, there'll be a special screening of Joseph Pulitzer, Voice of the People. Dolph will be there to introduce and talk about the film. That gets underway tonight at 7 at Circle Cinema. For information on the exhibit and all the activities of Gilcrease, visit gilcrease.org. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.